Hi, film fans. Hi, music fans. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of our weekly podcast, Soundtracking, with me, Edith Bowman. We love to unearth wonderful stories of collaboration on different productions. We also like recommendations from people, but we also just love having conversations about film, TV and music. So welcome along and thank you so much for joining us. I've got to say, super excited about this week. You might have seen me on socials getting uber excited about the score for this film and this film in particular. You always get those moments, I think, throughout the year where there are films that come along that just grab you, that just kind of excite you for a number of reasons. Their unique nature in terms of they're trying to do something a bit different, or they're trying to tell a story in a different way, or it's just a beautiful marriage of collaboration. And I can say that actually about this week's guest, and then also Rose Glass, who you'll hear from next week about her film Love Lies Bleeding. She's following up from St. Maud. But this week, it is a welcome return to Soundtracking to a gentleman. I'm not going to lie, when I very first conversation I had with him way back around the release of Call Me By Your Name, I was slightly intimidated by not him at all. It was more in my head, really. But just, I think, because I was such a fan of his filmmaking and also the way that he'd used music, because at that point, he wasn't really using a composer. He was using lots of amazing existing music and having people like Sufjan Stevens create for him. And I'm just really glad that over time and over getting to spend some time with him, I've had a word with myself, and that intimidation has turned into absolute admiration for Luca Guadagnino. I can't tell you how much I enjoy getting to spend time with him, both in person but also remotely, as we had to do for this particular conversation, as he was in the middle of a worldwide tour promoting his latest movie, Challengers. He joined me from Los Angeles, and the bizarre thing was, just days prior to that, I'd held a BAFTA Q&A with himself, the writer Justin, Josh O'Connor, Mike Feist, and the extraordinary Zendaya. So the story, it's not really a tennis movie. Tennis is the backdrop to this kind of triangle of relationships. Zendaya plays this young protege who is just destined for worldwide fame and has to retire after an injury. And even at that point, she'd formed a friendship with both Mike and Josh's characters. And over the coming years, because that's the great thing about this film, is that it's a story that's told over a number of years. So we find them as kind of young teenagers, and then we go through and follow them till they're kind of in their mid-30s. It is about complicated relationships, and it's just absolutely exhilarating. And that's really helped by the score, I think, as well, which is scored by our old friends Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. And they have brought something exceptional to this particular score. I think it's different to what people would expect, but the way that Luca's chosen to use this, as you'll hear him talk about it, is it just adds to how brilliant this film is. So we're going to start with Trent and Atticus's title cue, Challengers.
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I saw you and then you were gone and my heart skipped a beat. And I thought you weren't coming back. Lovely to see you again. I have not stopped listening to the score for the film
since I saw you last week, I think it was. Compress Repress has literally been on repeat. It's what I wake up to in the morning and gets me in the mood for the day. Oh, it's just the best. And listen, congratulations on Challengers, Luca. It's an absolutely extraordinary film that just really stays with you. It warrants conversation. It encouraged me to make friends with people that I hadn't met before when we came out the cinema and we walked for 40 minutes down the road talking about the film afterwards.
It was just
an extraordinary experience.
Darling, thank you.
Yeah, really amazing. What jumped out at you when you first read the script, when you first read, you know, what Justin had written? What was it? What do you think you really kind of latched onto that, I don't know, it grabbed you?
I think the evident thing for me in Justin Skuritska's script was the structure of the script, the cleverness of it, that made me think, oh, this could be an exciting evening at the movies. The structure was something that I felt compelled me to try new things as a filmmaker. And then, of course, the characters. I spoke a lot with Justin afterwards when we met immediately after I read the script about the concept of what jealousy means, what a rivalry between three people means, and how the real unspoken language of this rivalry, of these challengers, is basically desire and attraction and this kind of energy that could be compressed and repressed, but is unavoidable.
And were those themes the thing as well that drove you towards how you, or what you wanted Atticus and Trent to work on, you know, in terms of those three things, that kind of rivalry, jealousy and kind of love, were those the driving forces behind what you wanted sonically from them?
The point is that as for the script, I went for the music in two directions. One is like a sort of like a wide direction of what I wanted in terms of the overall feeling of it. And then we went into the depths of every, let's say, unfolding of it. So in the first place, when I did the movie and I edited the movie with Marco Costa, we did it without music, except for some cues that we already knew where we wanted, like the Caetano Veloso song or stuff like that.
Yo no sé si este amor es pecado que tiene castigo. Si es faltar a las leyes honradas del hombre y de Dios. Solo sé que me aturde la vida como un torbellino. Me arrastra tus brazos en ciega pasión.
And the Bowie track and the Fine Young Cannibal track, all of that was already in the editing. But for the score, we did not use any temp score because it's ridiculous to do so. We just edit the movie the way we wanted. And I, seeing the movie, I felt like this movie has the energy that you get when you are happy, maybe in the summer, and you go to a discotheque with a club, with your friends, and you have the sheer strength of being happy to dance. So I called Trent and Atticus and I said, I think this movie should be made as a movie that make people dance. And I think this movie should be made almost like a party. And I told them, we need to have like a rave energy to this movie. And I want the audience to dance as much as they want them on the edge of their seats in terms of the involvement into the game. And I said, can you create an entire score that is like house music?
Thank you.
But of course, they love the idea, and I love their excitement about this idea. And then with Marco, we put the places where we needed the music, and then we discussed with Trent and Atticus what was the emotion that we were going to convey, or what was the lead moment for each character until the end, where you have all of them together.
I can't imagine what it sounded like without that as well, because the other thing that you've done amazingly as well, and you've not shied away from as well, is the kind of how high in the mix the music is as well, in terms of when you're watching the film in a cinema, it literally elevates you.
Like, it's a rave, and I wanted the rave.
I just love that you've the balls to kind of just crank it up, you know, just make it loud and make the kind of hairs on your arms stand on end. As well, because there's a lovely story to that you wrote the lyrics for it. Talk to me a little bit about how that came about.
I tell you in a second, because I have to find the name, if you give me 1 second. But we had put at the end of the movie with me and Marco Costa a beautiful song by David Bowie, which is I tell you the name if you give me 1 second, which I knew I wanted it at the end of the movie. When I was shooting, always been my idea to conclude the film. The piece was "Love Is Lost" in the Steve Reich remix. It's the darkest hour. So we used that, and one day I was in LA and I was leaving and I was excited by what I heard from Trent and Atticus, and I receive an email from Trent, and he says to me, "I know you love the Bowie song, but we would like to make an original song for the end titles. Would you be open to that?" And I said to them, "I adore this Bowie song, but I'm always open, and how can I not be open with you guys?" And then the flight took off, and I was midair. And I said to myself, what could be lyrics for a song that they write for this movie? Like, not as out of arrogance, but almost out of playfulness. I was playing with myself. And I was also thinking about a kind of energy that I honestly am attracted by, particularly with people that I am attracted by, which is repression. It sounds stupid to say or crazy, but I am attracted by the repression in people, because that strength that I see in others, in a way, it's a sort of like amazing proof of everything that they want, but they don't know they want, which for me, it's exhilarating. So I started to think about that. I started to think about people close to me who I can see their repressions and their compression, and they're like they can't release themselves. So I started to drop these lyrics, and I wrote these lyrics, And then I took the courage in my hands and I said, you know what? Let's send it to Trent and Atticus. And I said, guys, I'm in the plane. I'm so open to your idea that I even made some lines, some lyrics. Would you like to read the lyrics? And they said, please send. And they got the lyrics and they sent me back saying, oh my God, you can even write lyrics? And they said, we would love to use the lyrics in the song. And then that's how I became the writer of my first song with these amazing musicians.
One and one.
A house pop star now.
Yeah, well, but it's fun because you know, like I argue a lot with people. You know, I do the mistake sometimes to say to people, "Oh, you're repressed," and they hate that. But now I can send a song. Repress, compress.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, the gift of song to help it come out. You know, you were saying earlier about
in every way, kind of not in the specifically, you know, identity way.
Yeah.
You can come out from your own corners.
Yeah, that kind of music as well. It kind of blurs corners. It makes things more kind of rounded and sort of fluid as well.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing about the way that it makes you want to dance.
Yeah.
You said at the start when I asked you about the kind of script and reacting to Justin's, that for you, you felt like it gave you the chance to do something different as a filmmaker. And I feel as well with your cast, you've given them the opportunity to really exercise parts of their talent that we haven't seen them do yet as well. All three of them, you know, your three of your leads as well. All amazing talents and done wonderful things. But there's just something different about this film that they've been able to, I don't know, just show us depths of things and kind of relationships of things that we've never seen before. I think
that's true.
Because I guess there is an element of risk taken with that, isn't there, in terms of like who you cast and that it's going to work, both in terms of the chemistry on screen.
I guess you have an instinct. I have a very deep instinct. I don't think it's a risk ever for me. I very rarely mistake myself in the way I cast people. And usually I never made mistakes in terms of the possibility of achieving a great performance. More about the disappointment of the personality. A few times I got very disappointing encounters, but I would say 5% of the times, 95% of the times, I got great people, great friends, and great performers all in one.
Josh O'Connor is, I just think, going to be like one of the greats of, you know, in terms of kind of British talents and what he's
amazing.
Capable of. We're only at the start as well of this gentleman's journey of where he's kind of going. What was it about Josh that you really wanted to work with him on this, that he was right for this?
Jonathan Anderson made me meet with Josh and we became friends and we were like, you know, I like the idea that as far as I'm growing up and I have the responsibility of managing big movies and stuff like that, I still like the idea that making movies is like literally like playing with your friends. And so to make something that is an endeavor of playfulness with your friends, even if you fight with them, I love it.
It's that thing as well of the collaboration, you know, in terms of the way that you, it was so lovely the other night hearing Zendaya talk about how the idea that you knew what you wanted and you're so clear in terms of not making them do loads of takes of things and you kind of go, yeah, okay, we got it, let's move on sort of thing as well. It's just that sheer kind of confidence in what you're able to achieve. But with this film, all those different pieces that have gone together to make it work, you know, these choreographed sort of matches that are going on, and then these wonderful scenes that we have with these characters off the court as well. The preparation for this must have been kind of enormous to get to that point where as soon as the cameras go and you know exactly what you need and what you want.
We did a lot of preparation, but I always been very decisive as a person. And so I think, again, it was a movie about the game of life and the game on the court. And there was this idea of playfulness that I wanted to encompass in making it. It was quite brisk, 40 days.
It's really interesting to think about what people will take away from this film. And for me, you know, that idea that I came out of the cinema and started chatting to these two people that I'd never met before. And next thing we knew, we were across the other side of London. But for you, what did you take away from making Challengers? What's the thing that you took away from it?
I don't know. This is a complicated question to answer because I never really sat and thought about it. I don't know if I can still, I can already take something away from it. I feel I'm still in the middle of it, even though we finished the movie a year ago and it was delayed because of the strike. By seeing the movie with an audience, and I haven't seen it with the paying audience, I've seen it with the premieres audience. But I do not feel I can already yet be making this movie be behind me. I think in the middle of it, it's too close. Certainly, I think it's about learning that you can make a drama and a comedy that is kinetic. That's one thing that I learned.
How many people have been asking you about the ending?
Not many, because people knows that I do not explain my movies. I think that people know that I want an audience to make their own ideas. What can I say? I can say that I think Tashi is a director. So I believe that Tashi, c'est moi, somehow.
She's like a conductor. I see her
She wants the notes of Patrick and Art to sing together.
It's been able to create an ending like that, you know, both in terms of how it's written by Justin in the script and how you choose how you shoot that to make it that for the audience so that you are kind of making them go, having something where they make their own mind up rather than it kind of being wrapped up in a box sort of thing. Is that an easy thing to do?
I think it's a complex thing to do, a laborious thing to do, but also very intuitive things to do. You have to be patient enough to know that you are not going to achieve what you need to achieve immediately and that you have to build. Whether it's like the script, the revision of the script, the staging, the acting, the shooting, the editing, the visual effecting, the musicing, the sounding, and then delivering it to an audience. It takes time, but it's beautiful. I love to wait. I love the wait.
Yeah.
What is the most beautiful thing is those minutes, hours that you wait for the loved one to come to you. And you don't know if you are going to end up kissing them or not. And the anticipation of it and not knowing, it's much better than the anything after.
Absolutely. Those butterflies, that kind of alive feeling inside you is just the best ever. So great. Yeah. Listen, I want to ask you quickly before we run out of time about the choir as well. Yeah, the choice of that and kind of what for you, because it's so brilliant, the variety of types of music that you've used in the film, you know, as well as Trent and Atticus's score, and you know, you mentioned the
Caetano Veloso.
So yeah,
I love an idea of classicism, honestly, and I love the idea that you can put together classicism and experimentation, or that you can use classicism to make an experiment. I thought that Benjamin Britten choirs, they had together with the white voices, you know, children choir, they had this idea of innocence that they found arresting to use in order to portray the innocence of Tashi, Patrick and Art. They're innocent people. They are innocent of their own repression and they are innocent of their own desires, and they are beautiful even if they're messy.
Beautiful sight.
first time that I chatted to you for the podcast, way back for Call Me By Your Name, we had a lovely conversation about John Adams and also Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky to chat to Ryuichi's son a couple of weeks ago about this beautiful film. Yeah, about Opus, the film that he made with his dad.
I'm dying to see it. I feel so sad for Ryuichi to have abandoned us, but he's always with us. He's a great master.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful tribute to him, and just you feel so spoilt to have the opportunity to. You feel like a fly on the edge of the piano just watching him, and the way that his son's kind of filmed this last performance. It's absolutely beautiful. Do you know what else I loved you talking about last week was getting to work with Amy?
Yes.
Amy Pascal, and just kind of the excitement that you both had in terms of this kind of, there's been a levitational pull between the pair of you in terms of, you know, working together and it eventually happening. It's lovely when you kind of find those relationships or that kind of desire to work with people, and both in front of the camera but behind the camera as well, and what they can bring to your creativity.
I love Hollywood. I've learned a lot from Hollywood. I love the idea that Hollywood can make cinema, and I love cinema. And Amy, for me, is the embodiment of what is the best of Hollywood nowadays and for the last 35 years. And I always dreamt of working together. We met at a party where we started chatting and isolating ourselves because we both are shy in public places. And we made a vow. We have to find something to do together. And when she called me to offer me this movie, I was in heaven, because not only she maintained the vow. There was something kind about maintaining the word of wanting that thing to happen. At the same time, it was a perfect movie. And she framed it for me beautifully. She said to me, it's an erotic movie about messy people. And it was, oh, wow. I mean.
That's such a great way to put it. That should be on the tagline. That's amazing. So great. Listen, it's always a pleasure to get to chat to you.
Thank you.
And also just to experience your wonderful storytelling that really celebrates the power of music within that storytelling as well. Luca, thank you so, so much
for
your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It must be late there.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
Challengers, that Stopper by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Luca Guadagnino. A huge thanks to Luca, I adore that man, for taking the time to talk to us. Challengers is on general release now and is worth seeing in the cinema, if only to feel the full force of that score. Just get there and just immerse yourself in the film. You can hear my previous chats with Luca and Trent and Atticus wherever you get your podcasts, or you can go and search at edithbowman.com, where you can find every single episode of the podcast. We also have a YouTube channel called Soundtracking Extra, which we'd love for you to subscribe to, and you can follow us on our socials. We are at Soundtracking UK. We've got a few exclusives up on the YouTube channel, but we have no visuals for Luca, unfortunately, so you just have to enjoy the pleasure of his dulcet tones. As I mentioned, we've got Rose Glass coming up to talk about her next film, Love Lies Bleeding, which is coming out in cinemas on the 3rd of May. But next up, ahead of that, we have David Leitch and Kelly McCormick and my old dear friend Drew Pearce join me to discuss The Fall Guy. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.